Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club.
Back to throw, Meyer. Looks, rolls to the right. Pump fake, throws the ball. It is caught, Reggie Brooks! Reggie Brooks got it!
Downfield, and Hamilton again, coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
DB's on the field, the Sherron Jones throws.
To go almost 20 yards.
Ishmael down around the 5-yard line. The kick will come down and Ragib will take it. Takes it at the 12, 15, 20, 25. He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone.
That is the All-American Kyle Hamilton. His sixth career interception.
40, 45, 50. Down the sideline. At the 35. Or right to the goal line. At the 10. The 5. A touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamon.
Welcome back to another edition of Single High, Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com. Coming to you a couple days after Notre Dame's 56-3 victory over Tennessee State. Home opening victory, first home opening victory for head coach Marcus Freeman. I am one of your hosts, Frank Vitovich. Joining me today after a solo pod last week is my partner in crime, president of Kyle Hamilton Fan Club, a video analyst of Irish Sports Daily, Mr. Greg Flamong. How are we feeling about 48 hours out after Notre Dame's latest victory?
I'm excited just to come back and like get on the pod again. Last week, you know, hand up. Mea culpa from the two of us, didn't work out, and we apologize. That's unacceptable. You know, that can't happen in season. That's a bad job by your host there.
It was rough. It was, well, I mean, I mentioned it on the pod. Like last week was we had no childcare for the week because our daycare closes that week every year. Normally we just go. We normally go on vacation. We did not this year, and we tried to do it. We had babysitter lined up, just flaked, completely flaked on us. Whatever day that was, I think it was Wednesday was the day we were going to try to pod, or Thursday, whatever day it was. I can't remember. It was Wednesday. And that just never responded, like not even once. No response. Like, I mean, I hope she's okay at this point because she just literally never responded to my wife saying like, are you still coming? Like, and she was supposed to come the next day. Like, so there was just no acknowledgement whatsoever. So hopefully she's okay. Never met her. It was the first time we were supposed to use her. Never going to again. So lesson learned there. Yeah. But last week's windows were tight. We will try to not make that a regular recurrence throughout the season. But I'll be honest, I'm ready to pod tonight too. I'm going to get us started. With a delicious, hopefully it's delicious, double IPA, because I just also had, holy moly, man, one of the probably the worst bedtime meltdowns that we had to deal with in our household with our little guy. It was, ironically though, it was only the second biggest meltdown I've seen in the last 24 hours, next to LSU and Brian Kelly failing on the big stage yet again.
There it is.
Hi-o.
That's midseason right there.
I mean, we had to mention it. Like Brian Kelly, like just getting pantsed in a nationally televised primetime top 10 game. It was just, you know what? It made the Notre Dame start to the season, you know, even sweeter, just because it was the same look of just bewilderment on his face last night. The same Brian Kelly isolated by himself, you know, as things are falling apart, no one talking to him, him just by himself, arms crossed. You know, Mrs. Pollard probably was very upset, or maybe not. She was probably laughing because now, you know, Brian Kelly's not our problem. But it was deja vu, and it was glorious to watch. I honestly went to bed because after what was it, the 38. They scored their 38 point. And I was like, I was getting ready. I was like, okay, I am so tired. I'm going to bed. And I was like brushing my teeth and just like looked at Twitter. And I think I saw your message of like, oh my God, Norvell's really going to go for 45 on him. And then next thing I know, I look at the box score, it's 45. And I was like, that is glorious. That was great. How much, actually, I mean, did you have fun watching that? Like most of Notre Dame Twitter seems to have.
Yeah, I mean, it was an entertaining game. So that's for one. I think for two, like, you know, I was interested in to see how they would play because, you know, I think that people thought that LSU was their Bama win and not like all of their losses were bad. All of them were bad losses. And I know that the FSU game last year, like they lost on a, you know, an extra point or whatever, but they were down multiple scores for most of the game. Florida State had first and goal at like the 3 to go up 14 points at the game. And they fumbled. Like that was a gift. You know, LSU was gifted in that game, got boat raced by Tennessee, got boat raced by the awful program that was Texas A&M last year.
Hey, remember, I got family in A&M. I got to be somewhat nice to them.
Listen, they were awful.
Yeah,
they were awful. They were not good last year. And then they got boat raced by Georgia. So they lost a lot last year. And then not to mention the fact that they were like less than 20% post-game win expectancy against Auburn. Really low against Arkansas. Like they had some really ugly wins last year.
Oh yeah.
So all of their losses were convincing and they had a couple of ugly wins. Like it could have gone very different for them. And I think everyone expected that, oh, they're going to take the next step. And buddy, that's not how Brian Kelly works, man.
No.
And so to see them completely reliant on Jaden Daniels, completely just the whole game is either him making a play in the pocket or him scrambling. They must have had 12 rushes from running backs in the game. It's just like they couldn't do that. They got beat up on defense. It's such a vintage BK performance.
It was like when Kaiser had the great 15 and then in 16, he was like, well, we're just going to let him do it all. You know, just let him do it all. And you're like, wait. Remember how good he was when you helped him and you had a running game? It was great. It was also great because that article came out yesterday where Brian Kelly was complaining that, you know, Notre Dame was going to build an architectural building before they were going to give him new football facilities. And still talking about him. And then was like, you know, they ain't building an architectural facility, you know, here. It's like, cool, dude. You know, like he even said, he's like, oh, we needed $28 million or $22 million, whatever it was. I forget the number. He's like, yeah, we just went out and raised it. It's like, cool, man. Couldn't buy you, a reasonable showing in that Florida State game last night. So you love to see it. You absolutely love to see it. And you know what? Not that Pat Forty listens to this podcast, but he was complaining about Notre Dame fans dancing on BK today. And it's like, dude, he's literally still talking about Notre Dame. He was talking about Notre Dame in an interview the morning of that game. What do you think? What do you think Notre Dame fans are going to just sit back and go like, oh, cool, Brian, you know, good luck. No, you're still talking about Notre Dame. So Notre Dame fans still got to talk about him. So it was amazing. It was great. I mean, waking up this morning and just like sitting outside with a coffee while I was waiting for the dog to go to, you know, to do his business. And just scrolling through Twitter and seeing just all of the memes and not even memes, like just the quotes from national pundits about, you know, Kelly and LSU just being unprepared. It was delightful. It made Saturday's, no stress, win even better. But I mean, it was just, yeah. Loved it. Loved every second of it. And I hope there are more games like that in Brian Kelly's future at LSU. Now, if we know him, he'll also probably rattle off a couple good, you know, solid wins against, you know, weaker foes. And then next time he gets on that stage, he'll probably do something similar. So That was great though. That was like, that might've been the highlight of my Labor Day weekend. I'm not going to lie. Cause we didn't really go anywhere. And I've been dealing with, like I said, no childcare and just kind of, I can't wait to go back to work tomorrow. That's how the last like 10 days have been. I'm like, man, I get to go to work tomorrow. I get to commute in. I get to take a train tomorrow. Like, whoa. Okay. There we go. Let's go. So that's enough Brian Kelly talk. We'll make fun of him some more later though, based on questions. I know that, but let's talk a little bit about the game. And then, looking forward, because I think, we've kind of settled in here that we'll probably do Sunday, well, normal week, maybe like a Sunday pod, or, this week, a Monday, and probably won't do.
Sunday or Monday.
We probably won't do the two a week this year, though. At least I might try to do a second short one on like a Thursday night. We'll see how that goes. Yeah. But it's like a little bit of Tennessee State. Look ahead to NC State and kind of where Notre Dame's at. I think these games, like, it's so weird. Like, it's been fun, obviously. Notre Dame was 98 points in two games and hasn't given up a touchdown, only given up 6 points. I kept calling it the preseason in all of the articles that I've written since the game, because it kind of has that feel for me right now. Like, I know you're not a big NFL guy, but like anybody watches the NFL, like preseason, you're just like, it's football. It's something to watch. And that's kind of how these two games have felt. I mean, obviously it's been great to see the team clicking on all cylinders, but it's like, these games went kind of exactly how you would expect them to go given the level of competition. And it's been really hard, I think anyway, to really draw too many conclusions, positively or negatively. Like, I had friends like, are your expectations changed? I was like, no, they kind of remain exactly where they were, August 25th, day before the Navy game. Cause it's like, nothing that I've seen has made me think like, oh, this is a whole lot better. This is a whole lot worse than I thought it would be. So I guess where are you at, two games in now, and what we've seen the last, the last 2 weeks from Notre Dame?
Takeaways. They don't have to be as efficient.
Yep.
Regardless of opponent, you could be a little bit more sloppy than they have been.
Totally.
It's like, penalty wise, and
that's a good point.
Just they haven't been, there has been no hint of any sort of disorganization. There's no real drop off in play from, whether it's backups or starters or whatever. I think that's notable. And I think that the organization of the team from kind of top to bottom in kind of all aspects stands out to me. And that's a big deal for me. And I mean, that shows coaching, right? That shows attention to detail, having control of your program and your operation. I think that's important. But to your point, we don't know that this is, what they are, this is actually the true, what their ceiling is or what their actual level of play is. They're not playing anyone who can challenge them physically, athletically. And so that remains to be seen. And, I think there's a question about my biggest concern or our concerns or whatever. Or maybe that might be for the mailbag tomorrow I'm doing for Hit and Hustle. Whatever the case may be. I think it's just that I hope the team understands that what the first two games don't indicate their quality. Their quality will be determined as the season, because even Central Michigan is much better than these two teams.
Right.
So that's something for them to keep in mind. Hopefully, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I think the efficiency, I think, is probably, to your point, the thing that stands out kind of the most. Specifically, now you mentioned it too, there has been a lack of penalties, unless you're Antonio Carter, and then you get thrown out of the game for a helmet to shoulder hit at the end of the second quarter, which I know I heard you and Jamie talk on the Hit and Hustle, kind of immediate reaction show about the lack of targeting called on the Devin Ford hit. But like, honestly, like what are we even doing with targeting at this point? There's no, like, It's just so bad. Like, and it's getting worse. Like, it's like in there, it's like when they introduced targeting, it's like, okay, they're like, oh man, this resulted in too many kids getting thrown out. We're calling it too much. We need to lighten it a little bit and give some leeway. But it's like, in doing so, they have just created this ambiguous mess that now, like, nobody knows what is and isn't targeting. Nobody, right? You have a rules expert on NBC who's like, no, this is not targeting. And then immediately they're like, well, no, you know, targeting disqualified. And it's like, the rules guy is like, I guess maybe they see it this way, but let's like, what do you do? Like, obviously it is broken. If a player can get hit in the helmet and get concussed, and then there's no flag, there's no review, there's no nothing. And it's like, okay, even if you want to say it was accidental contact on Ford or whatever, or you want to say like some people on Twitter, you know, dug their heels in without mentioning names, saying like Ford initiated the contact. It's like, dude was getting hit before the helmet. After he started to get hit, he decided to initiate contact with a second guy. Sure. Okay. Let's dig our heels in on that, but whatever. Let's say that was like, how do you not even whistle down and review that play? Like, it's just mind-boggling. It's like, you see a kid, he's just laying concussed on the ground, and it's like, we're not gonna review this one. It's fine. Like, I don't know.
Okay. I didn't see the I don't know what you're referring to with the he initiated it. I don't.
Oh, there were some tweets saying like, oh, it's not targeting because Ford initiated the contact, like during the game. And I was like, that's
yeah.
A take.
I don't agree.
No,
it's not correct. Well, because
he was getting hit as he got hit. It's like
he was being tackled, so right. He can't. It's not like he lowered his own head there. Like that's not what happened. You know, I think that there's such a, like you said, like there's such a gray area, and it kind of like the criteria seems to change week to week,
crew to crew,
crew to game crew, to game, like whoever's in the replay booth, because the problem that fans have is we always say, well, look at what happened with JD Bertrand.
Yep.
I mean, that's a season ago, you know, like it's a season ago and you don't know who's calling anything. So it's just kind of like, you don't know what crew that is or who, what was, it has nothing to do with the person in the booth. But then you see Antonio Carter get ejected, and it's like, I just don't understand what they want, how they want the players. Like, Antonio Carter is responsible for the safety of the quarterback who is ducking his head. The quarterback ducked his head. Like, when Antonio Carter starts his move, the quarterback is upright. He starts to make the tackle, and the quarterback is up. He's going for his midsection, and by the time he gets there, the quarterback is now bent over at the waist with his head down as he sees, like, that is how he is choosing to absorb the contact. So I don't understand what you want Carter to do in that point. He can't change his path. It's not how it works. Like, physics says no. So I just don't, like, that's part of it where you're putting the onus of the protection of the player on the defense when it's the offense who has put himself in a vulnerable position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so people can talk about, oh, you know, he can't lower his head, or his head is supposed to be a little bit higher. I mean, we're talking about fractions when in reality he put himself in that position. So yeah. That's how I see that.
It's just the lack of consistency is what gets me with it. Like, to your point, yeah, we'll look at plays and be like, oh, how is that targeting if this isn't targeting? And then, like, I think the most frustrating thing with me with all this, too, is, like most of the time there's one of these, like, egregious misses. Like, the conference officials will come out and be like, no, that was the right call. Like, remember when Torrey Hunter just got, like, obliterated in the end zone in Austin, and it was one of the clearest targetings that you'll ever see, yet the officials kept their flags in their pockets because, you know, you couldn't give Notre Dame first and goal there. And then the Big 12 came out after that game, and it's going back a few years, but it's like the Big 12 came out after that was like, no, that was not targeting. And it's like, Torrey Hunter literally, like, was never the same player ever again after that hit. You're going to tell me that wasn't targeting. Okay. And it's like the same thing, like, with this Devin Ford hit. It's like, come on. Like, it's just like, I would have had actually no problem with the call on Carter if they had called the previous one, because I've come to expect that, like, when it's borderline, they're going to just err on the side of calling it targeting. That's my expectation. But when the same crew looks at one play and goes like, nope, not even going to look at that. Nah, it's not targeting, even though he's concussed. Sorry, kid. And then you're going to look at this other one and be like, woo, I don't know. That was a really hard hit. Ball went flying. Probably targeting. Let's look at it. And then you throw him out. That's when it gets me. It's like, there's not even consistency in the same damn game. Like, I get, like, okay, maybe different crews are going to call it differently. Different replay booths. This is the same crew, same replay booth. It was just, I mean, we needed something to be mad about in the game because there was really not much else to be mad about. That gave us something at least, but that was just so annoying. And it's just, it's frustrating because it makes, like, again, it makes watching a game now, it's like every time there's a big hit, like, I'm honestly like, are they going to call targeting? Are they going to review this? It was a big hit. And anytime that they do, I'm like, I have no clue which way they're going to go because you never know. And because there's no consistency. So outside of that, the lack of flags has been actually pretty refreshing. Because you remember that was not the case to start last year. Notre Dame was a little very sloppy those first two games as they started 0-2. And, you know, the road game against Ohio State last year was at least a little more understandable versus like the home game against Marshall, where there was, you know, a little bit of sloppiness. So it's been good to see. I mean, I think there was a little bit of sloppiness when the backups came in and you had a different, you know, different cadence, but that is obviously to be expected. And we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, Steve Angeli and what, you know, what he looked like later, because there's questions regarding, you know, his play. But, I mean, yeah, overall, it's been clean. It's been fun to watch. Like, in a way, but it's also been kind of like, all right, now I'm ready for like a real game. I'm ready to see what this team, you know, can really do. And if Notre Dame comes out and takes care of business against NC State, I don't think anybody can ever like complain again when Notre Dame has two games like this to start the season. Cause there was obviously a lot of complaints. You know, again, I was posting articles throughout the week and people were like, who cares about this game? Why are you guys even covering it? Like, it's like, okay, come on. But like the fact that they've been able to come out, just get like as much work in as they, you know, as they have before, you know, the first road game against NC State, I think is great. And I think we're going to see, you know, what kind of team we have. What would you say are any, you know, anything that you're looking at with a grain of salt right now from what you've seen so far?
What am I looking at with a grain of salt?
Yeah, like what have you seen where you're like, okay, that seems good, but I'm not ready to trust it yet as that is who this team is, versus like more of it just being a byproduct of like you played Navy and Tennessee State that you're hoping continues.
I mean, all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I look at, like, the running game, and I'm like, okay, I'm pretty sure the running game is going to be pretty good all year long. So I'm not really looking at, like, say, the success of, like, Estime or Jeremiah Love or, you know, any of the backs, really, and saying, like, I don't trust that they're going to be able to do that. Because we saw them do it last year, you know, at times, yeah. Maybe not every single week. But, like, that, I'm, you know, and I'm even Hartman, I'm looking at, like, I have not been one bit surprised about what Sam Hartman has done because he's doing kind of exactly what I, you know, what I expected him to do.
I mean, I guess the efficiency, right? I mean, I think that's probably the biggest thing is everything is so easy, you know, like, can that continue against a better team? Like, what happens? Because, like, okay, they're really surviving right now on just being able to just kind of spread the ball however they want. You know, they don't have to take shots. They don't have to put really the quarterback at risk or anything like that. Like, they don't have to do those things. They can hit tight ends if they want. They can hit wide receivers. They can hit backs. They can do what they want with the backs. Like, can they keep their efficiency when it's got to be a little bit tighter, when they actually play corners that can stress these wide receivers, when they can't just give the ball to whatever back and it goes really well? Like, what happened? Like, can they still be efficient when they're playing that way? Because sometimes you can, right? Sometimes you can. But I don't, that obviously remains to be seen. Like, that's why NC State will be such a good kind of barometer for that, because they have real dudes. They have real guys on defense. You know, they have two really good corners. They can defend the pass, you know? And so what happens when Jaden Thomas and Tobias start getting jammed all over the place, right? And then all the other outlet stuff isn't available. You know, everyone says, well, you know, Tobias has to step up. Well, does he? Like, they score on every possession. So it's not like – it's not like, and not just him, but like any of the field wide receivers, like they're not getting really anything from the field wide receivers. So like they have to step up. I mean, yeah, like they have to be good players, but like, I don't think that not getting anything from that position is, what is that hurting them so far? Nothing, you know? So that's where you kind of think, okay, like we haven't really seen what happens when it's like, they need to make a play,
right?
You know? So that's the part where it's just kind of unknown. You know, there's so many questions. Like, people are always saying, like, you got to get Tobias going. We got to give him some plays. Well, why? Why do they? They don't need to. They score all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They've scored 49 and 56 points. You know, like, they don't need to. You can't. They've had like three or four empty possessions in two games. So it's not like they don't. They're not moving the ball. The things that they're doing are working. So that it's just that. Like, what do you do when they start taking things away and you have to start forcing things a little bit?
Right. And I think that's been, like, it's been interesting to watch, to your point, is like, it's, there's things going all around with the ball, and it's like, haven't really, like, I mean, Hartman's been good on like intermediate throws, but he hasn't really, other than the 1-2, and I should, you know, I'm going to load it up actually, cause I can see it right in PFF. But other than the 1-2 to Merriweather that did not connect, you know, in, I'm going to load it up right now. You know, in the Navy game, like, he hasn't really, you know, attempted that many, you know, deep passes. Right, and I'm trying to load it up to see the exact numbers here. And of course, it's not working. But it's like he's just been kind of taking what's there and hasn't really. Here we go. Why am I doing? Why am I passing depth? That's what I wanted. Yeah, so he's had, let's see, 7 attempts of 20 plus, which actually that even feels high to me.
Well, like, okay. 20 plus, right? How many are 30 plus?
It does not give me,
like,
30
like
plus.
No, but I know that.
Yeah.
but my point is like it says 20 plus, and that accounts for 20 to 60 yards, right?
That's true. Well, yeah.
How many have gone like over the top? Have they thrown a post? Like, I don't think they throw a post. So, no. You know, like, those are all, like, corner routes. They threw a deep ball to Tobias, obviously. That's very well covered. But, like, the rest of it is just kind of, like, their corner routes or out routes or something to that effect, right? Like, the kind of the over-the-middle deep ball to Jaden Grahaus. Like, that's a post, right? But it's, like, not, like, a post-post, you know, where it's, you're rearing back and you're letting it fly kind of thing. They haven't thrown that ball yet. Hmm. So, but again, have they needed to? They have
not. That's the thing. It's like, So I think it's there. I think it, they just haven't, you know, and is that a product of like, hey, we don't need it, so we're not going to do it. We don't want to put it on film yet. I don't know. I mean, it could be like, I mean, Notre Dame could have run the ball every down against Tennessee State and scored a boatload of points. And, you know, and still been fine. So it was really just what do they want to, you know, what do they want to work on? And I'm trying to see, too. And the other thing I don't know about those, the PFF stats, maybe you could correct me here. Is that air yards or is that just air yards? Okay. Because I was like, does that account for, you know, catch and runs? But, yeah, I mean, you look at it and. Yeah, there's not, I mean, there's not like, you know, Flores has a 20 yarder. Yeah, Payne has a 42-yarder, but that was catch and run. Price has a 40-yarder, but that was catch and run. Colsey has the 25-yarder, but that was catch and run. Tyree's the 24-yard. That was – I don't think that was a 20-yard attempt, though. Didn't he catch that around, like, the 5? Or did he catch it inside the 5?
It's a 20-yard attempt.
So it had to be, like, just around 20, though. Yeah. That was,
I mean, he caught it like the 2 or something.
Oh, was it? Okay. All right. And you got the 35-yarder. You had a Greathouse and a 27-yarder to Thomas. So I think it's going to be there. And I think that's what will be interesting to see, this weekend when they're facing a team that's not Tennessee State and that's not – it's not Navy, and not that NC State looked great in their opener. I mean, they were fine, but they didn't look all of that impressive. We'll see. I guess is kind of what I'm getting at as to how much of what we've seen so far is a product again of the competition, and also how much that we have not seen is a product of the competition in that. How much has Notre Dame been holding back? Because they're like, why would we put our good stuff on film against Navy and Tennessee State before we start playing, you know, Power Five opponents? Which there would be a lot of logic in that if they were like, we're not going to put this out there because when we go down to NC State and we play our first road game, we want some things there that that people haven't seen yet because. While the offense is largely the same as last year, it's still, you know, Jared Parker's offense and it's still Sam Hartman, new quarterback. So I think this weekend's game will be very telling. Like if we're still not seeing them stretch things vertically, I'm going to be disappointed and I'm going to wonder why, because we know Hartman can do it. Because I think this is the game that you start to open things up. NC State isn't, you know, a top 25 team, but they're not the kind of team that you could be like, well, we're still going to keep some things in our back pocket for Ohio State. Like you can't be, Notre Dame's not in that position yet, but what are you looking at heading into this game? Cause we have 17 questions, by the way.
Okay.
17. So look what happens when I actually put the word out the morning of and give people like actual time instead of like, oh shit, we're doing this in like an hour. I'm just going to tweet it and tag a bunch of people.
Yeah.
But what are you looking for this weekend out of this game?
What am I looking for? I mean, just kind of that, like, what is your true level of play?
Yeah.
You know, what is it, right? Like, do they believe their quote unquote press clippings? There are no press clippings anymore, but you understand what I'm saying. Like, do they believe that stuff? Do they think that they're a made team already? Or is it that, do they have the hunger? Like, whoever we play, we're going to beat you up.
Yeah.
And we're going to dominate you. You know, like that is what I'm looking for. Like, are they for real about this? Or is it just your paper tiger? Like you're beating up on the lesser teams. And that's what I'm kind of looking out for. That's what I'm, you know, look at any of the previous Notre Dame teams. Like if you had started with their two weakest opponents, right? Like what yeah. would we be saying about those teams in the first 2 weeks? You know, we would be singing their praises, right?
Absolutely.
If the 2019 team opened with New Mexico and Bowling Green,
yep.
You know, what would we be saying, right? We'd be saying they're the greatest team we've ever seen.
True.
You know, so it's just we'll have to see. We'll have to see. That's what I'm looking for. I want to know what their true level is, and I want to know like that will tell us like what this team can be. You know, so
yeah. All right. Well, let's jump into questions. But before that, even you know, we got a review.
Oh,
we got a review. There was one last week that I read. Actually, oh, holy moly! Stop the presses. We have two reviews. Last week's was short. It was just football season is a go. Love the pod. Okay. all right. I'm going to read the name. I just saw the name of the reviewer, but we're going to read it because this is what we do. First one left a couple days ago from username. all right. You'll see why I'm laughing in a second here, Greg. But user Erection Killer. says Brian Van Goiter's favorite pod, perfection from the Kyle Hamilton intro that now know by heart all the way to the nearly forgotten listener reviews at the end. Love the podcast. There you go. You know what? We didn't even wait till the end this time. We did it right smack dab, in the middle. So look at that. That was an ode. I guess that might count as the Brian Van Goiter reference for this pod. I'll try to still work one in. I'm sure I'll find a way in the next 17 questions. But also a little K-Ham, shout out there, as well. So appreciate that review. We got another one here. This person, I don't know if they've just maybe haven't set their username because the username is GHHJGGV. So I don't know. that would be pronounced. Not going to try it. The title of the review, though, is Crack Open a Cold One and Enjoy This Pod. I consume many Notre Dame football pods, and this is easily one of my favorite. Frank and Greg bring a different view on Notre Dame football. I enjoy their different styles, and it fits very well. Enjoyable pod that is fun and informative. From X's and O's to beer and food, if you are an Irish fan, you will not be disappointed. My only complaint is I'm always left wanting more shows. Thank you both for a great one. That's a hell of a review.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, that was great. That was great.
Thanks, lady.
Exactly. Thanks, lady. And 68 reviews, still a perfect 5 out of 5. That's, you literally can't get better than that. Like, it's impossible. There's no way to improve upon our ratings right now. So, hey, that is always fun to read reviews like that. We appreciate when you all leave us positive feedback like that. It makes it worthwhile. So, speaking of what also makes it worthwhile is the questions. And this week, like I said, we have 17 questions. That's a lot of questions. So let's get into them. There's some good food related ones building off of our last review there. I'll move my window over here. So let's do this. And as I'm talking, my Philadelphia Phillies are really trying to blow an 8-1 lead. That's fun. Don't like that. Don't like that as much as I like the reviews that we just read. So let's jump into questions. So, all right. First one, Chris Jenkins, as always, thank you for the questions, Chris. He says, so what do you think the difference will be with this go round with Hartman versus NC State, referencing his past stats articles? Okay, so that's his first part of the question, which, for those of you unaware, actually, it's funny, as I messaged Greg this last night, like, oh man, I wish I did not look up Sam Hartman's last performances against NC State, because he has thrown 6 interceptions against NC State in the last 2 years at Wake Forest. So let's start. What do you think will be different this time around for Hartman?
Well, I mean, we just said he's played 2 games. He hasn't really pushed the ball down the field. His average depth of target is the lowest it's ever been. And he's playing completely different because he is playing in an offense that's completely different, right?
Yep.
Like, he doesn't have to make big time throws for Notre Dame to move the ball. I mean, Notre Dame plays four running backs. Has he ever had that? You know, like, that's not a thing. So it's just completely different offense, you know. He doesn't have to take chances. He doesn't have to be the focal point of everything all the time. So that's what's different, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Audric Estime, simple as my answer, is he's not had a running back like Estime that he could just hand the ball to and just pound an opposing defense. And it's to your point, it's always been like, Sam, drop back, sling it, see what happens. He doesn't have to do that. He's not going to have to do that on Saturday. And, you know, Estime, I think, is going to have a big game. And to your point, the other running back. So I think that is the big difference. Chris also asks, how much should coaches refrain from publicly saying they are going to beat the heck out of a team in reference to Brian Kelly saying on a radio appearance last week that they were going to beat the heck out of Florida State?
I mean, there's that. And then there's Dion, who has been saying to anyone who will listen that they are the greatest thing in the history of the sport. And they went out and won, you know.
True.
It kind of doesn't matter. Some coaches.
You can say it as much as you want as long as you back it up.
Right, but that's true of anything, right? Like, you could exactly. you can pay all the respect you want to your opponent and they can still beat you, you know? Like, no correlation there. I mean, like, I don't care about radio appearances and stuff. Like, it really doesn't matter. Like, no one really thinks that he's trying to talk trash. You know what I mean? Like, he's not his style. But like Dion, you absolutely believe. Like, everything that he says, you absolutely believe that's what he's thinking. So, you know, it's fine.
I think to me is what it says is that he is still like it. Brian Kelly's still trying to be like what he thinks that like an SEC coach should be instead of just being Brian Kelly. And it comes off still times as, you know, as awkward. And it's like, it's a little bit, and there's questions I think coming up about this too, but Freeman is like, last year, I feel like Freeman was trying to be like who he thought he needed to be as a head coach. And we're seeing him start to be Marcus Freeman head coach, you know, versus what he thought he's supposed to do. And it's been fun. It's been great. I'm pretty sure there's a question that comes up on it, so I won't go too much into it here. But it's like, I think Brian Kelly trying to talk tough is just like, come on. It's like, it's not, it's Brian Kelly, for God's sakes. Like, it's not who he is. And it's like, it just comes off as inauthentic. And then what happens, you know, happens. And it's like, well, now not only looks like a fool. So, Brian Kelly, I would refrain from it. Deion Sanders, Deion Sanders isn't a career talking bold, right? Being brash. Like, Deion is being Deion, right? I don't think Brian Kelly is being Brian Kelly. I think he's being, you know, what he thinks he's supposed to do. So I think that's the big difference there too. Yeah. Last question from Chris. Thoughts on Angeli's play?
Thought it looked good.
I thought so too. Right? I saw there were people complaining. Like, again, it's like, oh, Hartman better not get hurt. Because, oh, this kid. It's like, for God's sake, this kid's first career passes. Right? Like, give him a break. Right? It's like, no one's coming in. I don't care who you're playing. And coming in, you know, cold. And just like immediately lighting it up as the very first time you're playing. And I think what people tend to forget too is, you know, like, while Angeli was who Notre Dame zeroed in on in that recruiting cycle, he didn't play in like a big time passing offense at Bergen Catholic in New Jersey. No, like Bergen is like a, you know, more old school, like, you know, I don't even want to say pro style offense. It's just like they ran the ball a lot. And Jelly wasn't throwing it 50 times a game in high school. Like, he was raw. Like, Notre Dame recruited him knowing they were going to have some work to do, but they liked his, you know, the tools that he had. So, like, it's not like, you know, he came from a similar offense where he's just, oh, this is what I ran in high school. Like, he's got some work to do. But what I really liked was he didn't force things. There were a couple times when the pocket broke down, he escaped. You know, he maneuvered the pocket well. And then he threw that one to Price. I almost mixed up. The first was to Price. The second was to Payne. The long screen touchdowns. So, you know, I thought he looked good. I think he settled in. I love the fact that this coaching staff put him out there with the first team offense. Can you remember a time that the last time in Notre Dame backup quarterback got to play an entire quarter with the starting offensive line and the starting receivers when there wasn't an injury?
Yeah.
For pure development. I can't.
Yeah.
Like, Brian Kelly never did that. Brian Kelly was, you know, of the school of, like, you know, when the backups go in, all the backups go in. You get the backup line, the backup tight end, the backup running backs, the backup receivers. That was great. I was shocked that it happened at first. And then I was like, I was trying to rack my brain. I'm like, I can't think of this. I don't, maybe Lou did it. You know, I don't ever remember Weiss doing it. Hell, Davey would have needed a big enough lead to take starters out to do it. So he probably didn't do it. I thought that was great. I thought that was a great move, you know, for the development of Steve Angeli. All right, next question is from Doc. At Dio Carroll 1 says, how do you teach players to not target if the referees apply rules so inconsistently? Do I blame my lying eyes or the horrible refs? I mean, we covered this a lot already, so I don't think we can go too deep into it, but you played defensive back, you know, before the targeting was a thing. How would you teach a defensive back? How would you teach, you know, what would you say to Antonio Carter after that play? Or like, just in general, like, how would you, like, how do you teach them?
Or do you, I would say,
would you just teach them, like, hey, do your best, try smart, but shit's going to happen, and don't make it easy, or no, don't make it, you know, easy for them to flag you.
I would say you got to get your head higher.
Yeah.
Get your head up. That's what I would say. Your head has to be up. It's that simple.
But I mean, it's tough, right? Like, to teach, like, it's especially, we've said it all pod, the inconsistency is the most annoying thing. And I think that's probably, for coaches, what makes it the toughest. It's like, you know, you teach them to do it, and you're like there were some of the Bertrand ones, I remember, it was like, this is probably how he was taught, you know, and it was like, oh, but hey, still targeting. So it's one of the things in this sport that I think, of the many things that are kind of broken in it right now, it's one of the most broken. Yeah. Next question comes from Peter Smith at his Peteness. He gives us three tweets in total, and a couple of questions. So we'll go through them all. It says, evening, gents, a lot of questions. Feel like the weakness for Notre Dame is run defense. Am I wrong? I understand it's Navy and Tennessee State, but it seems like those two teams made two or three bad moves and the game went our way. Seeing the start of Ohio State, do we feel slightly less worried about that game? Let's start with the run defense. Are you worried about the Notre Dame run defense?
No.
Okay. Why not?
I don't think there's enough reason to be worried about it. Like, one drive, it's literally the start of the first drive against Navy, and it's the start of the first drive against Tennessee State, and then the rest is fine, you know? Yeah. It's not to say that I think it's kind of like, If let's say Notre Dame those drives didn't happen, would you, like, if someone asked me, like, do you think run defense is a strength? I would say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Right. Like, so, like, I'm not worried about it, but I'm not also not worried about it, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it. Like, I don't know what it looks like when, like, you get real linemen with real backs, like, running at them consistently, you know? Yeah. Like, anything can happen kind of once, you know? Anything can happen for a 4 or 5 play span, you know? So it's not that I think that they're fine, right? It's kind of like Tobias, really. Like, when people say, like, are you worried? I'm not, because I don't really have a reason to be worried. I don't have a reason to feel good either. Like, right. it's nothing, right? It is what it is. So, you know, it's kind of all remains to be seen on that front.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, I don't know, again, worried is probably not the right term. I do. That's one of the areas I am going to be looking. I think if I were to nitpick these two games, like, seeing more from Notre Dame's interior defensive line is probably something I would say is, like, something I would have hoped to see a little more out of. Like, we haven't really heard Riley Mills' name called a whole lot, which isn't overly encouraging, because it's like, he's, you know, I would have thought, you know, coming in that, like, coming into these two games, that these would be two teams he would just kind of completely overpower, you know, and we'd hear his name a lot, but it hasn't necessarily been the case. Looking him up, I mean, he's 10th highest on defensive grades through two games, really getting drawn down by a couple missed tackles. His overall, you know, his overall stats and ratings on, you know, on PFF, but it's like, just hasn't, I don't know, it hasn't felt like there's been a great, there hasn't been a lot of really good stuff coming out of the inside, other than Howard Cross, who's graded out phenomenally, and who's made, you know, who's made some plays. And then you got the Rubio injury, which, you know, you could tell last week already that, like, Freeman was kind of downplaying it. Now it's like, well, when will he be back, right? It sounds like, you know, a few weeks, which is not, not ideal. You would probably hope to have him for Ohio State, which, based on what Freeman said today, I don't know if anyone's thinking they will. So, I think it's a good question, because I think it is an area that's like, it hasn't been, you know, hasn't really stood out.
It definitely hasn't stood out. I think it's hard. Like, anything with the defense is hard, because it's really just the one game. Because Navy, I take nothing from it. I don't. And I just don't care about, like, how the D-line looked against Navy, because it's just too hard. There's no relevancy. It doesn't carry over, you know? Right. So it's really just Tennessee State, and Tennessee State just doesn't do it for me in terms of projecting forward. So I get it. Like, I have not been, like, impressed by JD Bertrand. No. Or, like, Riley Mills against the run, or I mean, I think Jason Anya has been pretty good, actually. But, like, you know, like, Gabriel Rubio, I thought, looked good against the run, but he's hurt, so that's not good. So I don't want to knee jerk about it,
right?
Like, we haven't really seen much from Jack Kaiser either, you know, but he's played well in, like, against teams that are better than NC State. So I don't want to knee jerk it, right? And I don't want to dodge the question either. But it's just, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just truly a wait and see. It is. If the person asking is like, I don't love it, then that's fine. Like, that's fair. You know, it's a fair take. I don't want to press the worry button yet, because there's no reason for me to be concerned.
I think that's a fair take. And Peter also tells us that he says, also laughing hysterically at Brian Kelly's halftime adjustments against Florida State, as were most Notre Dame fans. And you know what? I'll read it, because he left it, even though I disagree with it. He says, and also, Philly cheesesteak is overrated. It's essentially fancy steakums with liquid cheese.
Wow.
Oh,
Peter. I mean, those are shots fired, right?
Peter. You know, in a front to your whole.
I don't
take offense to it. I just feel bad for Peter. That just tells me the man's never had a real good cheesesteak. And that, I feel, I am sorry for you, sir. I hope you find your way to Philadelphia soon and you have a real authentic Philly cheesesteak. Don't go to Pat's or Geno's, even though they show them on every single game. Find, you know, a small hole in the wall type place in South Philly. You don't even need to get Cheese Whiz. I get provolone on my cheesesteak and it's delightful. So I feel bad for you. I do. But you can,
man, that's like, that's tough. It's just like, I pity you. Like, yeah. That's tough.
You can correct this, Peter. You can just go out. You got, like I said, find a good spot. I'll message you some if you want, to get a good cheesesteak. So I don't take offense to it at all. Moving on. We got some more food related questions coming up here. Cause obviously it's from our buddy Oscar at Vamos Irish, says, much has been made of these two easy games to start the year. Would you flip one of these teams for a different one later in the year? If so, which? I will say
it again. I'm confused by this. Say it one more time.
He's saying, would you, like, there's been a lot of talk of like, oh, there's these two easy games to start the year. Would you switch either of these two games where they are at in the schedule with a game later in the year?
Oh, okay.
I mean, I would say I definitely would not switch Navy. I like getting it out of the way. Getting it out of the way.
For sure.
Other than that, I think maybe I would say, if I had to, I'm looking at the schedule right now, I would maybe switch Tennessee State with Duke. Because Duke comes right after Ohio State. That's going to be a tough game. It's going to be an emotional game. You know, win or lose, having Duke, who's a pretty good team, on the road after is not ideal, by any means. So I would say if I could switch them, I those would be the two I would switch.
That's a pretty good take, I will Thank say. You. Like Duke, like, well, the problem though is like you're in Dublin and then you're going on the road again.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point. I didn't think of the travel.
Tough. Yeah, you don't.
And they did look a little sluggish to start that game, so that's a really good
point. And then you're on the road against NC State, like that really does.
Okay.
You're starting with three road games.
I didn't look at that from that perspective. I just looked at the opponents. That's a good point.
I think beyond that, you're correct. What I would do is I don't mind it because of the buys, because they have two buys. So this game is basically a built-in buy. So what you have is the Dublin game and you have the Dublin game and then you have a buy. And then you have the NC State game. That's essentially what's happened here.
Yeah.
Or like you have the Dublin game and then you have a scrimmage, you know?
Yeah.
And so that is kind of, you know, that's basically the deal. And then you have, so basically they get three byes this year. That makes it okay, in my opinion. I do think that the Duke game has the potential to be a little bit squirrely.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they look like, frankly, like I'm not super, like what their game is on right now. I'm not super impressed with them.
Yeah.
They're a good team. It's not like they're not good. I mean, frankly, they're about as good as NC State is, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So they're a good team, but like it's 7-6. They've really like let Clemson off the hook here. They should be up by a lot more. Like they should be up by more than this.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, it's ridiculous to me. Clemson also doesn't inspire me in any way. No. Clay Kubiak looks terrible. He legitimately.
ESPN said he's the next great Clemson quarterback. I saw it on the homepage today.
I gotta tell you. I mean, they lost in this exchange of DJU. I mean, DJU looked awesome for Oregon State, and Cade Kubiak looks just terrible. He does not look good. He's on about 5 yards per attempt.
Ooh.
It's like, it honestly, it like really, it like it offends me as a fan of the sport.
Ooh.
But anyway, that's tough. But beyond that, like, I do think that it is easy enough. It is easy enough for Notre Dame to say, you know what, you have the Ohio State game and then you have Duke. Don't be a bunch of babies. The one that concerns me is the one that's after. Like, I picked Notre Dame to lose to Louisville, not because I think Louisville's good, but it just seems like if they're going to drop a stupid game, that's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one they're going to drop. And so but I don't think changing the schedule in any way kind of matters. Like, I just think that with the two byes, it works out just fine. If it was just one bye, that would be different.
Well, then, I mean, now I'm reading too much into this question. But from that perspective, then, potentially swapping Tennessee State and Louisville, you would get Tennessee State the week before USC, which is almost like a bye before you play USC, or swapping Tennessee State with Pitt, because then you essentially have a bye before you're playing Clemson. And then it would be like bye Tennessee State, Clemson, the 3 weeks before. That's not terrible. So, but good question. I got us thinking. All right. Let's see. Oscar also says, he just says gloat about Ramon channeling KH14 on his interception.
I mean, it's a great play.
Yeah.
He has two picks that are Kyle Hamilton caliber.
Yeah.
It's a great play. I mean, it's, you know, full stop.
Yeah, totally. All right. Next question. He says, if the Tennessee State game was a Mexican dish, what dish was it? And I'll say he might have posed this in the Hit and Hustle Sunday morning show, and you might have missed it because I was in it. I might have missed it. So he asked it again because he and I were messaging about it. I've already answered and given him my answer, which he said might be perfect. So I'm going to let you go, and then we can see how it compares.
What Mexican dish?
Yes.
Is Tennessee State?
Is the Tennessee State game.
The Tennessee State game. Okay, let me think here. It has to be something. Man. It has to be something new.
Oh, okay. It's not
because it's like never before. Like, it has to be like never before kind of had. But is also like, don't need it again kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, oh, this was fun as like a one time, but I don't need to be doing that again.
Like a fusion.
Like a fusion. Yeah.
Okay.
A fusion. This is going to sound like people are going to be mad at me.
Can't wait.
To me, it's like ceviche.
Wow.
I don't like it. So I don't I never eat ceviche. Because it's not for me. Like, it's too many. Like, first of all, the onions and the tomatoes and all that stuff. It's like, it's just, those aren't my flavor profiles. And then with the shrimp too. It's just not, it doesn't do it for me. But I could see it being like, you know what? Like, this person makes like the best ceviche you ever had. And it's like, you just have to try it just one time. Try it one time. And then that's it. And then you try it. And then it's like, okay. Like, okay. I liked it. Like, that was, thank you for giving me that. Like, I will celebrate your ceviche dish. And it's good. And I will celebrate that. I don't need to do that anymore, but I appreciate the effort kind of thing. Okay. And that's what it is to me.
All right. So you want to know what my answer was?
Yeah.
I said it was like nachos.
Okay.
Right? Just volume. You kind of throw whatever you got on it. That's kind of what Notre Dame did. You just kind of threw a bunch of stuff there and we're like, it's good. You know, this is good. This is fun. I'll eat this. I like it. You know, I'm enjoying it. I could eat a lot of it. It's not something super fancy. It's not something, you know, like, you know, too crazy. So I thought it was like a, just like a big old plate of nachos, right? Like done
so,
well.
So, or another way is like, it's you go to some, I don't know, El Torito or something, and you get like the sampler platter.
Ooh, so yeah, right? It's just like a little bit of everything.
Just like we're getting a little too fancy. We're trying it all out. I will never do this again. I will try it out. And
I'll totally do it again. I mean, yeah, I'm talking about the Mexican food sample.
Well, no, but like I'm not gonna stuff myself again. Like what I'll do probably in the future is like I'll pick the couple that I like.
Sure.
And then I'll go with that. Because I'm not going to like all of it. I'll like some of it.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. That's good. I like that. I like where we ended up. I didn't like my answer, but I like where we ended up.
We got there. You know, it's not about the destination. It's about the journey. All right. We got there. All right. All right. We have so many more questions to go through. So let's crank through some of these. And I moved my window here. All right. That was Oscar's. Your buddy Michael Muto comes at us with, in light of Greg's publicly noted distaste for college football's current darling, Coach Prime, would you trade all of Notre Dame's skill players for Colorado's?
No, I would never trade players that chose to go to Notre Dame for players who didn't.
Agreed. And it's really, I mean, one... There's obviously Dylan Edwards, which was sad to watch him do what he did, because I think we all saw that was probably possible, and we're like, this is gonna be good when we get this guy in our offense when he's there, or when he was supposed to enroll. But hey, is what it is. I mean, other than that, it's Travis Hunter, and it's like, yeah, I mean, but that's just one, and it's like it's also like it's not sustainable for him to play 100 plus snaps a game and do what he did in that, in that game. Overall, top to bottom, would definitely not trade all of Notre Dame's skill players for all of Colorado's. So next question comes from our friend Robert Helicki. Says, really late, but maybe not too late. Greg, I know you are not worried with Tobias Merriweather, especially given his snaps per game and his run blocking rate. But are you seeing wide receivers get separation? I saw the RPO breakdown and prompted my question. And Robert also sneaks in Dallas Cowboys will win the East, followed by an LOL, which I could only interpret as Robert understands just how nonsensical that is because the Dallas Cowboys are a trash organization. So let's go back to Robert's question and say, you know, are you concerned with wide receivers getting separation? Because this is one I didn't bring up in the beginning because I knew the question was coming. But I do think this is a very valid question. What are your thoughts on this?
I am concerned, actually, not because they haven't gotten separation in the first two games, because they have. Mm-hmm. It's because the caliber of players that they've gone against are not providing them the test. And like they have played off. No one has pressed them. Mm-hmm. No one has given them any sort of like physical play. So it's like everything is easy for them now.
Yeah.
Everything is easy. Like the reason, like, frankly, part of the reason why they haven't gone deep is because they don't need to. Everyone's open short. Everyone's open. You know? And so they had a couple opportunities to go deep against Navy when a couple backs actually blew blocking assignments.
Mm-hmm.
And so Hartman had to get rid of it, but that didn't happen in the Tennessee State game. So they're getting open just fine. It's more of just like, hey, like there's been a couple times where Hartman could have thrown to 2-3 different guys.
Right.
And it's just, you know, it hasn't been a problem. So I am a little bit concerned about it just because they haven't seen it. And mm-hmm. it's one thing to play against guys who are just like every time they're playing off and you get a free release. And that's just a whole part of the game you don't have to worry about. And then you come up against a team that's going to get in your face, and it's a little bit different. So I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely one of those like, hey, let's sit back and see how this plays out. you know, this weekend versus a different caliber defense. So next question is from our buddy Richard. Says, how concerned are you and Greg with only two sacks through two games? Would you dial up more pressure, or is it just a matter of finishing? Also, congrats again on the little one, Richard. So fun story here, Greg, about Rich and I, which I don't know if I ever mentioned to you. So buddy of mine who I used to, now he lives back in Illinois, but who used to hang out with quite a bit, actually, for the last like 5-6 years, randomly one day texts me and is like, dude, I'm back home in Illinois, and I randomly mentioned that my buddy runs a Notre Dame football website. And my high school friend Rich was like, which one? And when he told him UHND, he's like, no shit. You know Frankie V? And my friend was like, I cannot believe this is actually happening right now. He's like, you're telling me people really know about this website that you run? So now Rich and I have hung out a couple times since then. But I thought that was hilarious the way that played out. That was like, I don't even remember. That was like 6 years ago, probably. But anyway, fun tangent aside, how worried are you about only two sacks through two games? And would you dial up more pressure?
Not worried. So, yeah. Navy doesn't count.
Yeah.
Because agreed. They don't throw the ball.
Six passes.
Yeah. And so.
And two sacks.
We had a question about this on the message board.
Yeah.
About just like, you know, there's only been two sacks. And so I made a point to look at the pressure rates on PFF. And in 19 dropbacks, Notre Dame had 17 pressures.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 17 hurries and 21 total pressures. So they had more pressures than pass attempts because they have more players.
Right.
Like they have more than one player creating a pressure on the same pass attempt, basically. So that being the case, I'm not worried, you know, like those are good. That's really good pressure rate versus, you know, per pass, right? If like you're getting a pressure on every single pass, like that's going to work out just fine. So I know I'm not worried about it. Like Tennessee State did a lot of stuff to roll the pocket and that sort of thing. It'll be interesting to see against Brennan Armstrong this week, because he's very mobile and he runs a lot. So that'll be interesting to track, but generally speaking, I'm not worried yet, for the same reason as everything else. No reason to be worried. In the first, we've had one sample size, and they got a ton of pressure on basically every single pass. So on that front, it should be just fine.
Yep. And also, I mean, to your point on Armstrong, sometimes when you're facing the mobile quarterback, it actually becomes easier to get sacks, because they tend to mobile quarterbacks tend to overestimate sometimes their own mobility and escapability, and end up, you know, scrambling into sacks, you know, a lot when you're bringing pressure from all over. You actually listening to you and Jamie on Sunday, I think it was, on that show, you know, did make me feel a little bit better about the pass rush, because it did feel like, I get where Richard's question's coming from, of like, it felt like, man, we're just sending all this pressure and we're not getting home. Like, what's going on? And it's like, this is Tennessee State. You should be getting there. So the advanced stats do back up that it was better than it looked, or it felt. But yeah, I mean, if we're talking, you know, not getting sacks this week, then I think it starts to be time for concern. So another one of those, like, hey, let's watch where this goes this week. Let's see. Next up, we got Clutch Sports Notre Dame says, aside from the questionable reffing of the game, as we've talked about, have you noticed a different mindset of Freeman? He seems to have that dominating mindset, as evidenced by the final drive by the Notre Dame offense in the first half. So I alluded to, again, I saw that question earlier, so I didn't go too deep into that earlier, but what are your thoughts there?
His aggressiveness?
Just his mindset in general.
I mean, he definitely has a plan, right? So that's good. Like, he definitely has a clear idea of what he wants, right? I want more possessions. He did this against Navy, too, where it was like he handled that situation really well. They got a two-minute drive, basically, because of their use of timeouts.
Yep.
And so that was nice to see. I liked how they handled the timeouts. I liked how we talked about, like, I'm going to leave you one timeout, and you're going to be just, you know, that's what you're going to have to work with. Like, I liked that, you know. So I liked that he had a clear plan there. He was going to go for it on 4th and 2 with Angeli in the game. They went for it, but they false started. I kind of wish he had gone for it even still on 4th and 7. Because it's like it's 35-3. So it's not like the outcome doesn't matter. I want to see Steve Angeli operate in those conditions.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I wish he'd have gone for it again. Because it's, again, why don't you want to go for it on 4th and 7? You're less likely to get it, right? And if you're less likely to get it, then you want to pin the offense back. But once the score gets to a certain point, the game context is gone. You know, like, it doesn't – the logic of, like, well, it's 4th and 7. We can't go for this. Well, actually, you can. Like, you don't have to punt ever at this point. It's all about getting reps. Now, if it, you know, I want to see our punt team operation. We haven't seen it in 2 games. All right, fine. Maybe that's fair. But – you know, it just, like, I like the fact that he was going to go for it originally. I don't want to knee jerk too much, because it's very easy to be aggressive when you play an inferior opponent and you're up by so many points. So, you know, it's one of those things. I don't want to pat him on the back too much, but it is, to the point, it is good to see that, right? It is.
Yeah. I think what I was kind of alluding to earlier is, I think just in general, we're seeing Freeman become more comfortable as a head coach. We're seeing him much more comfortable on the sidelines. Like, he just has a different command to him this year. Like, I talked about it a lot last year on the pod. Like, you looked at him at times last year and he just did not look comfortable at times. Like, specifically, I always think back to that Stanford game where he just looked like, you know, a man on an island. Which is not like he just didn't look it, like, you know, and which is understandable. First time head coach, you know, kind of feeling out, like, what is my role here on game day versus, you know, what it used to be as a defensive coordinator, like, not wanting to overstep bounds, knowing that, like, you know, he has, you know, all that stuff. Like, you could see it all last year, I think, in his sideline demeanor. And this year you're seeing him much more, like, it appears much more in charge and much more comfortable. And, like, you know, he's passionate on the sidelines this year. He's doing a really good job, you know, in that regard. And yes, the competition's not been great, but I think, you know, Clutch Sports is, you know, point here, even on the timeouts, was spot on. Like, Brian Kelly, I don't think would have done that. We've seen him in those games. Like, In a game like this, playing a vastly inferior team, Brian Kelly would have been content to go in at halftime 28-3. And he wouldn't have thought of it as like, I need to get a two-minute drill in here for this team. I just 28-3 is fine. We'll come out in the second half, score twice, and then I'll put my backups in. Like, that would have been his mindset, I feel like, just watching all the games that we did. Because I used to be annoyed. I'd be like, you know, we're not really going for it against, you know, some of these inferior teams. So I thought that was, you know, just a good indicator of how he is, how he's settling in. And I think everything we're seeing from him is a guy who is much more comfortable. Stakes are going to get higher. He's still a second year head coach. We're going to see mistakes. It's just bound to happen. But I'm very encouraged with what I'm seeing. I think, you know, of all the things that I see improvement from, you know, last year to this, I think the sideline might be one of the biggest areas that we can take away after 2 games. So I'm encouraged, and really, really happy with what we're seeing. Moving on to Drew Brennan at Drew Brennan 77, who is, again, if you, for those listening, he is, the owner of the Exit 77 podcast. It says, now that the competition is stepping up, do you expect the Notre Dame rotation on offense and defense to get a lot smaller? Second question, do you see Hartman going deep a lot more this weekend? I think we both already said kind of yes to the second part of that question, that we envision, you know, Hartman
pushing things vertically more, you know, this weekend. But what thoughts on the rotation? I mean, I think it has to. Like Notre Dame I tweeted it out. Now I can't remember. It was 37 or 39 defensive players played an actual defensive snap last
week. Yeah, it'll definitely shorten.
Yeah, you know, but what do you think even about like at say running back? Like what now that you know you're playing a stronger opponent. What do you think is going to happen? Say like at running back. Like who's RB2 this week? Let's go there because I think that's the one area where there's still a lot of you know rotation.
Payne is RB2.
You think he's still RB2?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
You think Price and Love still involved?
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's move on to Woj. At Woj to God said, is the lack of deep throw, we touched on this already a little bit too, but is the lack of deep throws an issue or a product of the first two opponents? I think first two opponents. Yeah. All right. Evan said at Elo Sun 8 says, I like this one a lot. Who is doing a better job with/for Notre Dame right now? No, NBC or Under Armour?
Who's doing a better job for Notre Dame?
Yeah, because I mean, I think if you polled Notre Dame fans, and I think that the kind of the genesis of this question is like, I don't know that a ton of Notre Dame fans are very happy with like the NBC or the Under Armour partnership. You know, we've talked about some of the things that we would like to see Under Armour doing that they're not. Sell the Marcus Freeman collection. Just sell it. We all want to give you our money. But anyway, but who is doing a better job for the university and the program right now? Both have, you know, some level of NIL going on. We know that.
I probably NBC.
You think so?
Yeah, because it's just it's the more important job.
Notre Dame feels backseat to me right now on NBC. We are getting C team.
Feel like that.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Like who did what game was it that Tirico called?
He called Penn State, West Virginia.
Yeah. I know he called a game this week for NBC. Oh, he can call another college game? He can call the Notre Dame game? Like Tirico was great as Notre Dame's play-by-play announcer. So it feels like there is almost no investment on the NBC side right now, other than the NIL collective thing that they are doing. So I thought it was a great question because I think both can be doing much more outside of just giving Notre Dame money. That feels like both feel just very transactional right now, where it's just like, we're not going to go above and beyond. We're going to pay you, do what you want with the money. We're not going above and beyond. That's how it kind of feels. So that's why I thought it was a really good question. Evan's second part of the question says, Tyler Buchner got second team reps for Bama on Saturday like he would have for Notre Dame. What do you think the minimum role/playing time is for him to be happy with his decision to transfer? That's a tough one.
I can't imagine he's there. I can't imagine he feels happy. I mean, maybe he does. I don't know, but like,
it's just the whole thing though. Like, are you surprised?
Am I surprised by what?
That Buchner is not the starting quarterback at Alabama.
No.
No. Is anybody?
No.
Right? So it's like the whole thing felt weird from the jump. It was like, dude, you have, what did he have? 3 starts under his belt at that point at Notre Dame. It was 1-2 as a starter. One was real bad, the Marshall game. And it was like, you're going to go to Bama. It's just like, it never felt like, I mean, the only thing that I think anybody thought was like, well, maybe Tommy was just like, you're going to start. Just do it. You're going to start. But obviously that wouldn't have made sense. So it's just like it never made sense from the start. I didn't get it. I remember like the first when a buddy texted me like, oh, it looks like he's going to go to Bama. I was like, why? He's not going to start at Alabama. Like, he should have went somewhere where he could have developed. And it's just like, it's unfortunate, right? Because it's like, I mean, he only has so much. He just needs, like, he is like the poster child for like somebody who just needs reps, man. He missed so much time due to injury, due to the COVID season in California, basically robbing him of his senior year. It's just like, just needed reps. And it seemed clear that like Bama was not the place you were going to get him. So anyway, hey, Notre Dame is in a solid spot, I think, quarterback wise. So, we move forward. Speaking of, we have one more question on quarterbacks. I'll skip ahead here from Juan Carlos Tefel. He says, what do you think of Angeli? Did you guys like his pocket presence? Usually one of the biggest weaknesses of young quarterbacks is lack of pocket presence. I thought Angeli hung in pretty well or pretty good. You know, I thought so too. I mentioned it in the earlier question, right? It's like young quarterbacks take time to get comfortable. They're not going to come in and just like immediately like start tossing bombs the first time. And he's got a lot of work to do, but he's got tools, and you know, pocket presence is a lot harder to coach, right? It's like that feel is a lot harder to coach than some of the other things. So I don't know. What do you think about him in terms of his pocket presence?
I mean, the touchdown that he threw to Jadarian Price, where
it was great.
He eludes the rush. He looks like he's going to be sacked, and then he gets out of there and he throws a touchdown. Like,
I looked like he thought he was throwing it away at first. Like when that play was happening, I'm like, he's just getting rid of. Oh well, God, there's a receiver. You know, like okay,
yeah,
cool. That was great. That was a little schoolyardy. It was great to hear the story afterwards about how the two are actually roommates. You know, and he gets to catch his roommate's first career touchdown pass. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Next up, the puzzle dipshit. That's the actual username, folks. At @ZachDavis_ND. This is, what are your initial thoughts on the NC State line opening around Notre Dame -7? Excited to watch this team play its first prove it game of the season. I saw it open at -6.5, which I thought was very low. Not a betting man that much. But I thought it was low. If I were a betting man, I think I would take Notre Dame to cover that.
I thought it would be in the double digits.
Right. 100%.
Yeah. That was very surprising to me.
All right. We got Fred Melky says, how was the helmet to helmet contact on Ford's kickoff return not even reviewed? All right. We covered that part, but then he says, could Freeman have taken a time out to request it? He could have taken a timeout in hopes that then they reviewed it, but he could not have called for a review, correct? Or by misunderstanding.
He could have, but they review that stuff all the time. Like every single play is reviewed. It would have been a non-starter.
Yeah. So, all right, two more questions and we could wrap this one up. Nick Buchholz said, when is the last time Notre Dame had a quarterback that gave you confidence that they can beat anyone while also having a defense that allows you to feel the same way? Disclaimer, I don't feel that way yet with the defense, but it's close. Last time Notre Dame had a quarterback that gave you confidence they can beat anyone while also having a defense that made you feel the same way.
While also having a defense?
Yeah, 93 is the last time I would say I felt Notre Dame had a quarterback.
That's not true. I thought, honestly, in 2018, I thought Ian Book was good enough for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're operating in hindsight. We absolutely were very excited about Ian Book.
We were, but I don't know that, like, I'm trying to think back if I actually thought. I don't know that I went. I'm trying to think.
Because here's the thing. The problem with these questions is we don't know how this actually goes. We don't know if the defense is actually good at all, right? Like, we don't know that.
Nick even says that.
Right. So, like, we don't know, right? So, I'm telling you, in 2018, post-Stanford,
I thought, man, Notre Dame's really got something here. They really did, yeah. Especially because Dexter was back then. I mean, Ian Book played great that day. You know, like Stanford, we thought was like number six or number seven or whatever they were. That was a top 10 win. We absolutely were like, man, we've really got something here. You know, like that was when. Didn't work out, but that was when.
I don't know if I did in 18. I mean, I think I felt like maybe. I don't know that I would be. I was like, I don't know I was necessarily confident walking into the Cotton Bowl in 18. Because I went into that game. I don't know that I felt confident. I'm trying to think. I don't remember if I picked Notre Dame to win that game or not. I mean, before that, like, I mean, I definitely, there was at no point when Brady Quinn was quarterback, did I feel like he had a defense that could beat anybody. I never thought Jimmy Clausen had a defense that could beat anybody. I never felt like Paulus could beat anybody when he was a quarterback. So, yeah, it would be like, it would be McDougal, Meyer, as I'm watching my Phillies potentially blow this 8-1 lead. Sorry about that, folks. I just really messed up. Anyway, like those would be the days, I think, that I would say probably. There might have been, I will say, if we're calling, you know, calling ourselves out on things, I would say maybe there was a time in 17 when I thought, oh boy, the way that Wimbush can move and the way this rushing attack goes, maybe, you know what I mean? Like maybe, but then we know what happened there. So good question though. All right. Last question we got is Tim Flynn says, before they even come out, why are the AP rankings so atrociously bad? I guess because they don't matter, right? They don't matter. I mean, I guess they kind of do. Like, and the coaches, the only thing they matter for right now is just like debate until the college football playoff rankings come out. It's just we can use them to talk about things, but like once the college football playoff rankings come out, like nobody cares about them. So it's
the playoff rankings all the rankings will take care of themselves very soon.
Exactly. So, whew, that was a lot of questions. We answered them all, though. We answered every single one. So thank you all for all of those questions. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. I think we spent like an hour just on the questions alone. So we appreciate the questions, as always. We appreciate the reviews. Keep them coming in. As you know, we'll read them. I don't know. You know what? I know it's early in the week. I'm not going to ask for an official prediction out of you, Greg, but where are you at right now? Like, you know, on this is Monday night, still a long way to go before the game. Where are you thinking right now? You already said you thought Notre Dame would be a double digit favorite. So does that mean you think Notre Dame wins this by double digits?
Yes.
I am there right now too. We'll see where I end up by the end of the week, but that's kind of how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
So, all right, with that, and we're going to call this one. Like I said, I mean, I already thanked you once, everybody, but we're going to thank you again, because without you all listening and without you all asking questions, we don't have a show. We don't have a podcast. So thank you for submitting those questions. Thank you for submitting those reviews. And you know what? As always, go Irish.